Thanks, Mamooka, for organizing, and pleasure to be here with Steve and Richard. So I'm going to focus my comments on a few of the remnants that are left of the European security architecture over the last couple years, really the last two decades, and also some thoughts on how the United States might coax Russia back into some sort of arrangement for European security that serves its interests. So in addition to the points that Steve mentioned about Moscow's objectives for a European security architecture, I think there's three sort of overriding ideas that Moscow has in mind. First, it would like to have a new arrangement that gets the West to sort of bless its recent territorial gains in Georgia in 2008, in Ukraine, and its longer standing territorial occupation of Transnistria in Moldova. Second, it wants to find an arrangement to halt NATO enlargement. And third, it wants to avoid the creation of a values-based system, which has been embodied in the OSCE and the Helsinki Final Act. So the first point regards the Conventional Armed Forces in Europe Treaty, and I think it's an important starting point for thinking about a new kind of security architecture for Europe, because it was the culmination of decades of talks and development of norms and rules of the road for European security. And it also represents the most recent attempt by the United States to engage with Russia to try to come up with a new arrangement. So as many of you know, Conventional Armed Forces in Europe Treaty was negotiated. The negotiations began in the 1970s. Ultimately, the treaty was agreed to right at the end of the Cold War and ultimately ratified as the Soviet Union was dissolving. And in 2007, Russia suspended its implementation of the Conventional Armed Forces in Europe Treaty. And 2010, sort of at the height of the Obama administration's reset policy, there was a new attempt by the United States to re-engage Russia on CFE talks and try to come up with some sort of new arrangement. I think when a lot of people think about the CFE treaty, I think it's too easy for folks to simply dismiss it as sort of a relic of the Cold War and it being obsolete by the time it came into force in 1992. But a lot of the principles that underpin the CFE treaty really began decades before, as I mentioned, in the Helsinki talks, the Stockholm talks, the mutual imbalance, force reduction talks, and a lot of these principles that establish the rules of the road, I think, are still viable today, even if the text of the CFE treaty itself is sort of a relic. And some of those important principles are that parties will refrain from occupying other nations, that all international frontiers should be inviolable, transparency and notification for military actions, and the extremely important principle now of host nation consent, that is that military forces cannot be stationed on the territory of another nation without that nation's consent. So I think the bottom line for the CFE treaty is that there are a lot of underlying principles that need to be preserved and built upon in whatever security arrangement will be developed in the next years or decades. The second point I want to make regards Russia's new doctrine that Steve mentioned, which is sort of what I'm going to call the new realities doctrine, that Russia wants to find a new arrangement that will allow it to be able to say that the West has basically signed off on the new realities that it has created on the ground in countries like Georgia, Ukraine, and what it's continuing to do in Moldova. So when the United States embarked on these new negotiations in 2010 and 2011 with Moscow to try to come up with a new updated version of the CFE treaty, there were really only two issues that remained at an impasse, and those were regarding Azerbaijan and Armenia, with respect to Nagorno-Karabakh, and really this new realities doctrine that Russia had insisted that the United States must recognize the facts that have changed on the ground in Georgia. And I think this gave the United States an early warning, really, that appealing to principles with Russia in some of these negotiations were going to fail, that these principles that it had subscribed to for decades, host nation consent, were really no longer viable principles to engage in with Russia. And it's also instructive to remember at the time that the United States tried to talk with Russia about conventional forces in Europe, that at the time, really Russia had little incentive to come up with a new agreement. At this time, the United States was in the midst of announcing massive conventional force withdrawals from Europe. Around 2010 and 2011, this was the same time that two of the remaining four brigade combat teams were announced to be removed from Europe, that brigade that had been there really for decades before. This was at a time when NATO allies were really negotiating with themselves about whether to withdraw non-strategic nuclear weapons from Europe. So at this point, Moscow could really sit back and see a lot of its long-standing national security objectives really being accomplished without it having to engage in any negotiations at all. And of course, as we see now in eastern Ukraine and Crimea, Russia's really taking its sort of new realities doctrine to a whole new level. So I guess the natural question is how to deal with the security architecture now in Europe, given what's occurred in Georgia and what's occurred in Ukraine now. And I think the first starting off point has to be that simply appealing to principles with Russia won't work. There has to be more than just an appeal to principles, because Moscow has really jettisoned a lot of the principles that had underpinned the norms of the security order for the last, not only the last 20 years, but really the last 50 years. And I think the United States will have to come up with a way to change its own facts on the ground. And I think one of the ways that the United States can do this, and I think is probably moving in this direction, is to announce more of its own deployments to Europe, its own conventional force deployments. As many of you know, the Obama administration has embarked on a new initiative called the European Reassurance Initiative, which has resulted in temporary conventional force rotations through Eastern Europe. It seems that these temporary rotations need to be transitioned to a more permanent type of deployment in Central and Eastern Europe to show to Russia that its policies will result in a changed security architecture in Central and Eastern Europe from the NATO side as well. I think one of the counter arguments that has been raised with respect to more conventional reinforcement of NATO's eastern frontier is that Moscow isn't really concerned with conventional deployments because it has always, for the last at least 20 years and possibly longer, relied on non-strategic nuclear weapons to sort of serve as a countervailing force to NATO's conventional superiority. But I think I think at the end of the day, Moscow will not ultimately want to have sort of unrestrained NATO forces on NATO's eastern frontier. And it also ignores the concern that Moscow has expressed in a lot of arms control treaty negotiations about U.S. conventional forces. Some of you know, in the New START treaty negotiations, which ostensibly dealt with strategic nuclear weapons, Moscow was able to include certain restrictions on conventional long-range strategic conventional forces as well, which would count under the New START treaty. So there's certainly a concern in Moscow about the about conventional forces, U.S. conventional forces, and potential conventional force deployments. And I think it's worth noting today that the irony that the INF treaty, another treaty that is under considerable strain now because of some of Moscow's reportedly new weapon system development. The INF treaty actually came about through this sort of deploy and negotiate strategy. In other words, the United States has in the past indicated a willingness to announce deployments and carry through with deployments in order to re-engage Moscow in negotiations. In 1983, The Reagan administration announced deployment of Pershing 2 missiles to Europe while offering to Moscow the prospect of negotiating to reduce its own counterpart missiles, the SS-20. So it shows that this deploy negotiate strategy can work, and it's worked in the past. And I think it's going to have to be a strategy that the United States considers more in the future if it wants to form some sort of new security arrangement, a negotiated security arrangement with Moscow in the future. And the final point I'll make is that whatever new security arrangement is negotiated, if there's anything, it's important to remember that the United States Senate is extremely likely to ever approve any agreement that jettisons the principle of post-nation consent. Unlikely to ever approve any security arrangement, any treaty that comes up for approval in the Senate that would sacrifice the principle of post-nation consent. The last time the Senate spoke unanimously on this issue was in the 1997 resolution of advising consent to the CFE flank document, which changed some of the flank configurations of the CFE treaty, and it said very clearly that the policy of the United States is to achieve the immediate and complete withdrawal of any armed forces and military equipment under the control of the Russian Federation that are employed on the territory of independent states without their agreement. So I think this is an important backstop to remember that whatever the executive branch, whatever the administration attempts to negotiate with Russia, no treaty would ever be approved in the U.S. Senate that sacrificed this principle of post-nation consent.